I'm James Finlayson, and you're listening to Boat Radio. Boat Radio is based on the beautiful northern coast of the island of Mallorca, and we do like to explore our nearest harbour, the enchanting Port of Soye. Usually, Shirley Roberts is our guide to the port in the Port of Soye radio programme, but today she handed that job to Mike McDowell.
It is a spectacular morning, just a little bit of a breeze and bright sunshine sparkling on the crystal clear water. It's a weekend, but it's busy here. Sea kayaks and stand-up paddle boards are crisscrossing the water, and a shoal of what look like mullet, but I'm no expert, are gliding past below where I am standing. What I'm here to see today is a familiar sight to those people who live in northern Mallorca, a pristine Scottish trawler, a historic vessel, almost 70 years old, lovely in varnished and polished pitch pine and baby blue with a bright white wheelhouse. This is Bonnie Lass, now a charter vessel and sometime TV star. And here to tell me all about her is owner Pete Lucas.
I've been running boats for 18, 19 years and spending a lot of time away from the family, all over the place really. So I needed to change the way that we were living. Part of doing that was to get out of the big yachting game and start my own business.
Because you were a super yacht captain.
Yeah, I was a super yacht captain, and I sold the last boat for the owner, and he looked after me very well, which enabled me to buy this boat and refit it.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the history of Bonnie Lass.
She was built 67 years ago, and she was built as a herring ring netter. So back in the day, they would fish for herring with drift nets, so they'd make a circle of nets and two boats would normally work together, and she'd carry, one night she caught 20 tons of fish. She's actually registered to carry 18 tons of fish, but this is back in the day when there was plenty of fish to catch. And one of the things I find the most interesting is that she's very, very easy to push through the water. She's not a trawler, so she was designed before major mechanical fishing. One newer boat, similar to this, but slightly bigger, was built in 1965. And that boat was fitted with a much bigger engine. And when it went pair trawling, it caught the same amount of fish in 1 month that this boat would have caught in a year. So that just gives you an example of how the mechanicalization of fishing has changed and why we don't have any fish left in the sea.
So where was she built?
She was built in Kirkenzie by Weatherheads, and we've actually had on board the son of the owner, who was 7 years old when she was built. And he remembers going home from school and going to the boatyard and helping the guys out when they were building the boat all those years ago.
So when you bought her, and I think people might find this a little bit unusual, but you bought her back in 2014, were you specifically looking for a historic Scottish trawler?
I'm going to have to come clean about this. I wasn't. She was very cheap and very rotten, so which meant that I could afford her. I would have loved to have bought a sailing boat, but I didn't have the money to buy a big sailing boat, so I bought a big old fishing boat instead.
We're standing on the foredeck now. What are her measurements?
She's 57 feet long. She was originally fitted with a 60 horsepower two-cylinder Kelvin diesel, and then in 1964 they went big style and put 120 horsepower in her. And like I said before, she's supposed to be able to carry 18 tons of fish in the fish hold, which we're just standing above now. She worked for all of her life until about 20 years ago she was commercially fishing.
Obviously you've had to do an awful lot of work on her. She's absolutely pristine. Did you live aboard when you first bought her?
We did, yeah. We couldn't afford to rent a house and have the boat in the marina. So when we bought her, we moved out of the place we were renting here in Mallorca, and we moved straight on board. So I took a month off work in January and brought her down from La Rochelle around the Bay of Biscay and down through Gibraltar. And we got here on the last day of January and moved on the first day of February. And she was in quite a mess. So it was an interesting to sort of drag the kids out of the house and stick them on a very leaky boat. When it rained downstairs, it rained everywhere.
You sailed her through the Bay of Biscay before doing any work on her?
She was actually quite broken. So the boat's constructed with oak frames and then pitch pine planks, and what's not pitch pine is now larch. And there's 40 frames around the main sort of central area of the rope, and for five of those frames they were broken on both sides, so the boat was actually moving independently and leaking, so sinking and moving. So when we saw her, I took some templates of the broken frames and got steel cheeks made and repaired those frames, which stopped her leaking enough that was able to bring her down here.
Can we take a tour below decks?
Should we start in the engine room? Because that's the kind of the heart of a boat like this.
Let's see how she sounds. Brilliant.
Okay. I'm just going to plug into the power so we can get some proper lights, and then you'll be able to see properly down there.
Oh, sure. Take your time.
Do you want to come on down?
Okay, here we go. We're descending into the engine room,
which is a bit of a squeeze.
Hang on.
I'm trying to do this one-handed. And I'm a bit old. Oh, wow. Blimey, the smell of diesel is overwhelming. So, what are we looking at?
We're looking at a Kelvin from 1964. It was built in Scotland. And what's quite nice is you can actually call up the Kelvin dealership and speak to somebody. They put you through to one man who has a paper file on the engine that they built.
So that is marvellous.
Nothing is computerised. They provided the motors for the Shackleton expedition. So historically, they were quite a big, big company.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing. Kelvin, back in the day, Kelvin and Gardiner were the two main providers of fishing boat engines and commercial engines. I don't really know why, but Gardiner obviously sold a lot more units than Kelvin did. But the engines have a reputation for lasting forever.
Well, 60 foot, what's that? That's 50 odd years and more. How many cylinders?
Four cylinders. And on the top of each cylinder, as you can see, there's a decompression lever to start it. So I'll go through the starting procedure. I'm going to lift up all the decompression levers.
Righto.
And then on this, on the port side of the engine, there's a big pump. You can see the handle here.
Yeah.
This actually pumps up the oil pressure. So the engine never starts without oil pressure, and in a minute there'll be a nice noise, which is the oil squirting out the top of the engine. There we go.
The cylinder head is enormous, isn't it?
And then we'll switch the electricity on. So now I've pumped up the oil pressure, and now I prime the fuel pump. So pumping away, pumping away, pumping away. Takes a little while, which is nice because you're down here and you can see if anything's going wrong, and 5 or 10 minutes each time you start up.
Well, it's 5 or 10 minutes of contemplation.
Exactly. Okay, I can actually see the diesel beginning to squirt out of the bleed screw at the top of the high pressure pump now.
Is the engine room basically as it was when you bought it?
It's not, because one of the things we had to do is when we coded the boat for charter for MCA, there's a long, long list of requirements and safety requirements. So before, she didn't have any firefighting equipment in here, and now we have an automatic extinguisher. And also I had to cover the whole of the engine room in this insulation, and it's for fire. The list is kind of the list of requirements for the coding for you, in order for you to be able to take passengers, is quite long. There's requirements on requirements. It's a very, very, very good code book, and it makes it much safer for people to be on boats. I think it's a good thing.
Am I looking at a head there?
Always there was the, traditionally the toilet was in the engine room.
Right. Why was that?
I have no idea. I mean, it was, when we brought the boat down in January, it was very cold, so it was actually quite nice to come down here in the nice warm engine room.
Yeah, sure. I guess this is the part of the boat that will be tossed around the least.
She has quite a good motion, because actually the hull shape is very similar to a sailing boat. It's only kind of a slight generation onwards from when they were actually putting sailing rigs on
them. Yeah, yeah, sure.
So I've just primed up the high pressure pump here, the fuel pump, and should we see if she starts? So turn her over, and then I start each cylinder by putting the decompression levers down. So we'll start at the back and work our way forwards.
Amazing. Listen to that. Oh.
It seems almost extraordinary that such a huge beast, because we're looking at an engine here that's about the size of a wardrobe or
smart
something.
Car.
Yeah, it's about the size of my wife's smart car, actually, and yet it only kicks out 120 horsepower.
I think the important thing to remember is that back in the old days they were really quite big horses. The torque that the engine has, because it's got such big cylinders and such a big bore, is immense. So a more modern engine, an engine we could buy today by Cummins or Yanmar, 120 horsepower would be about the same size as a gearbox. What I find quite interesting is that this engine will run for many, many hours because it's never overloaded and it runs at very, very low revs. We're probably at 300 RPM right now and maximum revs is 700.
Maximum revs, 700 RPM. These seem very small numbers, don't they, by modern standards, particularly when you can go out and buy, for a few thousand euros, you can go out and buy 120 horsepower jet ski type vehicle that'll take you to 60 miles an hour and make a very high pitched whine, not like the bum 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 throb of this beast here. So how much fuel does she burn when you're at sort of cruising speed?
Give me one second.
Beast just grabbing a spanner to make some adjustments.
Just turning the cooling water on. But you were just asking about the kind of the fuel economy and the other numbers. What's also quite interesting is the fact that a modern diesel engine pumping out 120 horsepower to drive a boat like this would probably be burning 15 litres an hour, 12 to 15 litres of diesel fuel an hour. This engine, when we're running at 7 knots, we're doing 700 RPM and we burn 7 litres an hour. It's an interesting one. I mean, I was very surprised when I bought the boat to just see how fuel economic she was. We did a job towing another boat, so we were towing a 60-foot boat at 5 knots and we were still only burning 7 litres an hour. Yes, it was built to last. And then you also think about the fact that how many hours will this engine run for before it needs to be scrapped and replaced? And in these days of trying to recycle everything so much and concentrating on the environment, it's wonderful to think that this engine has been fishing and then being used for pleasure and charter work with me for these so many years. The amount of energy it takes to build a new engine, normally engines last for maybe 10, 20 years maximum, then they would need to be replaced. Whereas we're sat here looking right now at an engine that was built in 1964 and it's still going like a dream.
Perfect. Right, let's head out of the engine room now and conduct ourselves in a bit of peace and quiet on the rest of the tour.
I'll just shut her down.
Right, I've climbed back up into the wheelhouse for a close encounter with the ship's dog. Pete, who's this?
Maggie. Maggie's 5. She comes out on every charter with us. She works very hard during the summer. She's put a bit of weight on over the winter. She needs to go on a bit of a diet, but as soon as she starts jumping in the sea and paddleboarding with all the clients again, I think she'll lose it.
So, Pete, we're in the wheelhouse.
Do you want to have a seat in the captain's chair?
Big old wheel there. Gosh, this does feel like we've turned back time a little bit.
The wheelhouse was put on in Spain, actually, by the Irish owner, maybe 20 years ago. So originally she would have had a considerably smaller wheelhouse, and that was so that they could work with the nets. Still got a net hauler on the bow, and there used to be another net hauler just behind where you're sitting, so on the starboard side. Originally they didn't have net haulers at all, they hauled the nets by hand, and they needed quite a bit of room in order to be able to pull the nets over the side of the boat. There would have been no railings on the boat and the wheelhouse would have been only big enough for two people to stand side by side.
Right. Okay. Gosh, that is that seems very small. So I'm looking at a lot of electronics over there, but it's from another age. So that is a Sailor VHF radio telephone.
Yes, it works absolutely perfectly. This is still our primary VHF, and then above it there's a receiver for SSB and then a transmitter for the SSB. So back in the day, before satellite telephones and that sort of thing, the VHF works by line of sight. So you get maybe 25, 30 miles. Coast Guard stations, when they have antennas on the top of hills, will get 60 or possibly more. But from a boat station, you're lucky to get more than 25 miles. So with the SSB, they could reach considerably further. Using an SSB, I've been able to speak with people 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 miles away. So these are interesting. The windows around the wheelhouse have bronze circular systems in them. On your car, you'd have windscreen wipers, but if they got hit by a massive wave, they'd just wash away. So these are actually round windows that spin in circles and throw the water away from them.
Do you know what? It feels like it's a very comfortable seat, and it just feels like a terrific place to be, actually. I guess you enjoy it here, don't you? You like sitting here.
It's a good place to hang out, and it's whenever I go out with clients, they do love to come and sit in the wheelhouse. And it's funny because they kind of poke their head around the door and go, "Do you mind if I come in?" It's like the kind of the inner sanctum. So, but we'll always get the kids sitting on the driving seat and let them steer the boat. And
let's go down below and have a look at the amazing accommodation. And I should explain, as we walk past the wheelhouse, that Bonnie Lass is now available for charter. She's no longer a fishing vessel. You can rent her and spend the day exploring the magnificent coast of northern Mallorca. Okay, I'm just going to disappear down a hatch, see if once again I can do this one-handed without falling on my bum. Maggie, that's not helping. The dog is licking my face as I climb down the stairs.
She's always very
just
helpful.
Always slightly worried about what you've been licking before you were licking my face, but thanks anyway.
Shall we sit down around the table up front?
Yeah, gosh.
Maggie, you coming down?
Pete, this is amazing. Almost like a boutique hotel that we're standing in here.
Well, she's not quite finished yet. We just spent quite a bit of time here in Mallorca with a boat out the water doing an awful lot of well-needed maintenance work. So replacing frames and the top plank on both sides of the foredeck and new bulwarks and stuff. So you're not seeing her in her perfect state, but it gives you an idea. We've got about another 2 or 3 weeks worth of work before we're 100% ready. So when we bought the boat, it had a galley up in the bow here that was pretty much unusable. So one of the first things we did is rip the galley out, and then I put the new galley in. And it also didn't have a shower or a bathroom anywhere other than the engine room. So we needed...
How long were these lads at sea when they were out fishing?
They'd probably go... It was pretty much inshore fishing, so they weren't out for more than maybe a night. But what would happen is that they'd fish all around Scotland. So they might be living in Kirkenzie, but they'd be fishing in the Western Isles. So although they weren't actually fishing for days and days and days, they would have to live on the boat for long, extended periods. So where we're sat right now in the forepeak is the crew quarters. And as you can see, despite the fact the boat was built on a budget, they did an incredibly nice job of finishing it off. So there's five berths up here, so there'd be space enough for five crew. And where you're looking forward now, behind that bulkhead and that door, was just a storeroom. Right. And we've now put a shower and bathroom in there. I wanted a shower that, I don't know what you call them, but that just rains down on top of you. I've always wanted one, so we put it in.
Perfect, yeah, I can see that huge shower head above your head.
So back here, just forward of the fish hold, is the galley that we've put in. And originally it would have had a wood-burning stove in here. And I was speaking to one of the old boys who used to fish on the boat back in the 1950s. And he said that when the weather was very rough, the big, it was a Rayburn-style cooker stove. He said it was so hot down here and so cold upstairs, they could never get comfortable.
Oh, dear.
Because they'd have the coal-burning stove going while they were at sea. And in the deck, there was a coal chute. So when I actually rebuilt this area of the boat, I ended up shoveling coal dust out of the bilges.
How strange.
I'll tell you what strikes me about it, actually, is that this boat, I think, must have been constructed for a smaller man. I'm about 6'2". There's no way I could stretch out in one of these bunks. I'd have to have my knees bent the entire night while I was sleeping, I think, and I'd be banging my head a lot.
Yeah, I'm only 5.5 feet, so I fit in just fine. You're the wrong size gentleman to be a crew aboard the boat, I think. So as we move aft into what was before the fish hold, there used to be a bulkhead here, so you'd open a door to come into the fish hold.
Right.
And you can probably already hear on the mic that there's a bit of a sound of space.
Yeah, we've walked out of the snug galley and dining area into a much bigger space. This hold, basically. It's the fish hold, right?
It's the fish hold, exactly. She would have carried up to 18.35 tonnes of fish. And as we stand here, the opening above us is the deck hatch for the fish hold, which would have just been covered with plank boards and
right.
then a canvas cover over the top to stop water coming in. So as they would load the herring into the boat, there'd be one of the crew down here, and he would start at the sides of the boat. So they'd load the fish into maybe the starboard side or the port side, and as the fish got higher, they'd put in another fish board. So around us there are these big posts, 8x8 posts,
right,
with
right.
grooves cut in the side that you can slide
channels,
boards,
spikes,
and that stops the fish moving, because one of the most dangerous things with cargo on any boat is when the cargo starts to move.
Yeah,
and you can imagine herring, which are quite slippy creatures, they would roll backwards and forwards, and then they could actually turn the boat over. So hence the reason they had fish boards to keep them, keep the cargo from shifting, the fish from shifting.
Now what you have either side of the fish hold are a pair of beautiful double berths.
What we did is the boat was part converted when we bought it, but it was not done very nicely. All of the woodwork was covered in plywood and plastic melamine. And when we ripped it all off, we found these beautiful massive timbers behind. So we started from the beginning, really, ripped everything out until it was a complete empty hole. And then when we were putting the interior back, what we wanted to do is give it a sense of what it used to be. So we actually constructed the berth with fish boards. So we have, on the starboard side, we have an open day bed, which is big enough for you to sleep in.
Yes, it is. I can see that. It looks very comfortable, yeah.
Then on the port side, we have a kind of semi-private double berth. And then moving aft...
That's the honeymoon suite.
The honeymoon suite. Moving aft, we have a small single cabin on the port side.
Ah, so these snug single cabins are tucked either side of the engine compartment?
Yeah, they lap around the engine compartment.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Actually, that looks really nice. There's not a great deal of headroom, but I can see that it would be a comfortable place to sleep, and plenty of light as well, because there are deck lights set in the ceiling above you. Absolutely lovely. And the one on the other side too,
which is actually full of all of our safety gear at the moment.
And on the other side, it's a double, in fact.
That is the honeymoon suite.
That actually is the most private cabin on board. Beautiful.
So you see the front of the cabin here, that's a piece of larch. When we replanked the boat with all of the woodwork, all of the new planks are larch now rather than pitch pine.
Right.
And all of the frames are made of Iroko.
Right.
So the seat over here is a leftover piece of Iroko
that
was left over from the refit.
Yeah.
And everything that you're looking at here was made out of leftovers from the rebuild.
Right, brilliant. So it's beautifully done, though. Like I say, it looks like one of the, it's like being inside a floating boutique hotel. And I take it that it's pitch pine on oak construction, is it?
Originally, yeah. And then you can see there's a new frame, there's two new frames. So we've almost every frame has been replaced.
Gosh, you've done an awful lot of work.
We do.
Did you do the work yourself, or did you put her into a boatyard for the structural stuff?
I'm lucky enough to have a very good friend, Toby Millinder, who's based in Falmouth in Cornwall. And he is an incredibly good boat builder. So both big refits we've done, I've worked alongside him and we've done the work ourselves.
What are the options then for chartering Bonnie Lass?
We do mostly day and sunset charters. So above the fish hold, we've now got a large Iroko table. So we can seat 10 or 12 people around the table underneath a big shaded cover. And then up on the foredeck, we have a plenty of room for people to sunbathe and relax. Most of our groups are families, so we have a rope swing permanently rigged on the side of the boat, and it's almost like watching a big clock go tick-tock as the people just swing out on the swing, drop into the water, climb out of the boat, back on the swing, into the water. And that seems to be the rhythm of our summer. We also do paddleboarding, SUP charters. There's a really good local company here who rents paddleboards, so we rent the paddleboards off them and then provide a guide, and we explore some of the wonderful caves and scenery here on the Tramontana coastline.
Sure. I tell you what, another thing that's becoming more and more popular on the Tramontana coastline is, I think YouTube encourages this sort of crazy behaviour, but free climbing up the cliffs of the Tramontanas.
Yes, in Spanish they call it Psycho Block. There's some reasonably famous Spanish climbers who have perfected the art here, but it's a form of free climbing where you climb above the sea. That way, if you fall off, you fall into the ocean. We do two or three trips last year, and we've got some more bookings this year to take people doing Psycho Block, or deep water soloing, as it's called in England. It's quite amazing to see some of the very experienced guys get maybe 20 or 30 metres up and then jump into the sea after they've finished their pitch.
Well, what an amazing and heart-stopping way to cool off.
Yes.
Bonnie Lass has been in the movies, or certainly on TV.
Yes, there aren't many Scottish fishing boats hanging around the Mediterranean, so when people are looking for a more Nordic or Northern European fishing boat for publicity purposes, we seem to get most of that business.
And how did you get involved in marine conservation? Because I know you do, you're involved in a bit of that around Mallorca.
When I bought the boat, when I first saw it, I could see straight away that it would be a good and useful boat for charter with the ample deck space. And it's quite a charismatic boat. I mean, you when people look at it, they like it. It's got a really lovely shape to her. But also, I'd previously met a chap called Brad from Ondine, and Ondine is a marine conservation association here that does quite a lot of work doing beach cleans and working with local biologists to improve and extend the marine reserves around here. And one of their requirements on their wish list is they wanted an ocean-going research vessel. So when I saw Bonnie Lass for sale, I thought, there we go, we've got them, their ocean-going research vessel. So when we first brought the boat back down here, we pieced it back together as best as we could so that it would work, and we used the boat for their stingray survey. So we turned it back into a fishing boat again, and we caught and tagged sharks and stingrays.
So rather than catching fish, Bonnie Lass is now conserving fish.
Exactly, and it was a great experience and really good. My children and the dog came along too, so the deck was covered in stingrays and scientists, and It was a good project. We've done that for 2 years now, and we also do beach cleanups up and down the coastline where you can only get by boat, and work very closely with Association Ondine in their planning of new marine reserves on the north coastline here.
So, how do people get in touch with you? How do people go about chartering Bonnie Lass?
Well, you can find us, as always, on the internet at bonnielasscharters.com. Have a look. There's some good pictures of people having fun aboard the boat. And please, give us a call and come out for a trip for the day.
Pete, thank you very much indeed. That's fantastic.
Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Great to have you on board.
Oh.